thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
It's the Urban Sports Scene. We are back. I have my homie, my partner in crime. Hasn't been for a while, but he's back on the show. Say what's up, Will T.
What's going on, world? How y'all doing?
I'm sure they're fine. They're happy to have you back, man. It's been a long time, man. It's been a long time. How long has it been, man?
I think like four weeks, like 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
It was like in the middle of May.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
And also, you hear fans in the background. It's hot in here, so I need the fans. I'm not going to lie. It's like 95 degrees out here in the DMV. That is the Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area for folks who are not from this, this region. But, yes, like I said, glad to have Will back. Haven't had him here in a while, you know, part of the original Urban Sports Scene cast. Since Will's been gone, I had to do a show by myself once. I had Al on. I actually had, you know, I had call-ins and whatnot, so I had to host the show. I had this dude named Doc Hancock. Thanks, Doc. I appreciate you being on the show as well. Talking about some of the NBA finals. I actually had somebody come in for baseball. My man, Mason. Well, his last name's Mason. I'm having a moment right now. Like, I can't forget his name. I can't remember his name. His first name, excuse me. But I appreciate it. He was on the show talking baseball. Actually, he's a scout. And he broke down the Orioles and the Nats.
Oh, that's what's up.
Yeah, so much appreciated. Actually, you know, follow him. He's at Learn Baseball. Dan Mason at Learn Baseball on Twitter. He knows a lot about baseball. What's up?
It was an interesting article Sunday in the Post. I don't know if you got a chance to read it, about the guy who's a scout for the Nats. He's a scout. He's on the road for a majority of the year by himself and just traveling from place to place, scouting, you know, different college players and things of that nature. It's an interesting article for anyone who's
We're just talking about his day-to-day grind?
Yeah, his day-to-day grind and just how much he loves his job. He doesn't do it necessarily for the pay, because the pay is...
It's minuscule?
Yes, very minuscule, but I guess he sees the bigger picture.
And what's the big picture for him if he's not getting paid?
I guess one day he wants to move into be the head of scouting or be a GM.
Okay, so he's starting young. He's a young kid.
Well, no, he's not that young.
Oh,
no.
Really? He's not?
No. But he just does it for the love, and he says his life is tremendous. So much. I forgot... Jesus, because I wanted to talk about it a little bit, but I forgot who wrote. I think it was Tom Boswell, the Washington Post, wrote the article. But it's a phenomenal article.
Like the scout's life, I mean lifestyle, it's amazing. Anyway, you think about it, you're finding talent from all parts of the world. I mean, United States, really. And you're seeing them as high school. And your job is, you know, once you can find that gem. I mean, your reputation goes upwards. So you get the opportunity to say, okay, I found a Vladimir Guerrero. So if you go out the country, excuse me. So you go to Dominican, say, I found a Vladimir Guerrero. And then you can have that on your collar and say, okay, this is my resume. This is why I should be head of the scout team, things of that sort. So being a scout is exciting because you're going and doing the dirty work, you know, finding talent. Almost you're just as thorough as a GM. And you get more credit than the GM because you found this talent, and that's your pride. It's like, you know, finding, you know, basically as coaching, if you're a coach, you build this kid up, you work with him, you found this kid, you feel a particular way when that kid becomes successful. Same thing for a scout. Once that player, you found this individual, once that player makes the majors, you feel good about yourself.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you, but it was a very interesting article. Anyone who had the opportunity to read it on Sunday in the Washington Post, really makes you appreciate just the day-to-day grind he goes through to complete his job and the love he has for his job, even though, you know, the pay isn't great at all. So
it shows a lot, man. You know, these days it's hard for – these days we all have the match. We all wanted it to match our the figures to match our love of our actual job.
Yeah.
At least this situation, you know, this individual has the straight love for what he's doing.
Absolutely. So that's very commendable. And kudos to him.
All right. Also, listen to our homies, Voice of the Fan, their podcast show. It's at blogtalkradio.com/ The Voice of the Fan. The show is hosted by Alex and Jeff. The show is similar to ours. Great format. They talk all about sports and even entertainment, the entertainment world. Also, listen to our show, which is syndicated on the internet radio station Real People, Real Talk Radio. This site is managed by our good friends from Apple G's. Make sure you visit the site. It's www.realpeoplerealtalk.com. Our phone lines are open. Our phone line is open. Excuse me. Call in. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904.
All right, let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Hold on here one more time because I missed this. Say it again.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Woo! Like the nature boy Ric Flair, I tell you. All right. Baseball great. Actually, one of my favorite baseball players, Tony Gwynn, Hall of Famer Tony Gwynn, died yesterday of cancer at the age of 54.
Very tragic. I was very sad to hear of his passing. Anyone who's followed baseball for the past 20, 30 years knows just how during this past generation, Tony Gwynn was the most prolific hitter of our time. And not only that, he was one of the more noble gentlemen of the game and within sports in general. You know, I remember I was watching something. Yeah, I remember it was the I think it was the 98 World Series versus the New York Yankees, and they were swept. And Tony Gwynn was consistently being asked like the same questions over and over and over again. It's coming off of a tough loss like that. Most people would have just ended the interview, but he was gracious. He answered every question. He was polite. He didn't give people any snide comments or remarks. So that says a lot about a person like that that's in the position that he was in, you know, being one of the great ones in sports and also coming off of a very a devastating 4-0 sweep in the World Series to answer the questions with such grace and humility. So he will be missed.
Honestly, when I heard news, it saddened me. I'm a big baseball fan, and Tony Gwynn is one of the people that, you know, I looked up to as a baseball fan. Obviously, because we don't have a lot of representation in baseball in terms of African Americans, and I'm not trying to use a race thing, but in terms of for me growing up, my favorite baseball player was like Cal Ripken Jr. And Cal Ripken Jr., who wasn't black, but he was just one of my favorite baseball players. But after that, it was Ken Griffey Jr. and Tony Gwynn. Tony Gwynn was an individual to me, and growing up, I was a heavy set individual, you know, and seeing Tony Gwynn, a guy who can play baseball and play it and hit the way he can hit, you know, he was a master with that bat. I mean, he can go the opposite way like no other. I mean, he would go with the pitch, you know. It's a guy who was chasing 400 at the time, I think, believe during the strike season.
Yeah, 94 season.
He was chasing 400, and basically up there always for a batting title. In an era, we weren't around for Ted Williams, but I would say in my era of baseball, he was the best hitter I've ever seen. That's including Wade Boggs or whoever. Tony Gwynn was the best hitter I've ever seen, consistently 320 plus. Again, a guy, when you watch baseball, you see guys who struggle, you see guys who can't find their swing. Tony Gwynn's a guy that made baseball easy as a hitter. The ball's inside, I'll pull it. The ball's outside, I'm taking it the other way. Again, and like Will said, we're talking about a guy who's one of the most polite individuals in baseball. I mean, I don't know Tony Gwynn personally, but I know when I'm watching TV and I hear him talk during an interview or doing a game or even coaching for San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch Tony Gwynn, you just see it. You see a guy who's polite. You see a guy who's genuine. And it's a sad day in baseball. I just hope personally that he's represented, he's appreciated in terms of Major League Baseball in the right way. Hopefully having some type of statue, a big send off for Tony Gwynn, because this guy to me was one of the best baseball players we've seen, and I know I've seen in my era of watching baseball.
Yeah, just to piggyback off of that, he was the Padres. I mean, he's the face of the Padres, yeah. But he will forever be the face of the Padres. Actually, I was reading something online today, and they said actually the address to the Padres Stadium is like 1919 Gwynn Way,
yeah,
in remembrance of him, and they have a big statue out front. So I just hope Major League Baseball shows the appreciation that he deserves, you know, during a Midsummer Classic at the All-Star Game or something like that, and on throughout the season.
Yeah, just feel bad for a son who is in the majors. It's just a sad day. It really is. It was a sad day yesterday. And like I said earlier, and Will said it too, I just hope Major League Baseball steps up and and shows him the respect he deserves, even after death. So, I mean, even, you know, even after death. Yeah. So, it's again, It's a situation. Yeah,
once again, our condolences to his family. But next on the pregame, do you want to handle this?
Yeah.
I mean, the World Cup. You're a native.
I'm African.
Of Nigeria.
Yeah.
So this is both huge.
Both of my parents are Nigerian. I was born here, first generation. So obviously, I should care about soccer. I don't care about soccer.
You know what's funny?
Seriously.
You know what's funny?
Uh-huh.
People think, and we were talking about this off air, if you aren't amped for the World Cup, excited, boiling to the tee with excitement, people think you're unsophisticated because you aren't into the World Cup. Now, because you aren't into soccer in general, because they say, oh, it's the world's sport. Everyone,
which is true. It's the world's sport.
It is. It's the most popular sport in the world outside of America. I'll definitely say that. And because of the shift in the demographic, I think over the next 10 to 20 years, it will become even more popular in the U.S. because you have people, you have immigrants coming over the border and starting to really play it consistently and really show their passion to everyone. Not just abroad, but here also. But to piggyback off your sentiments, I really don't care about the World Cup. I watched the U.S. versus Ghana game, and I did catch some of the Italy-England game on Saturday, but it was for selfish purposes.
Explain.
Bonatelli, his girlfriend. Have you ever seen his girlfriend before?
Oh, no, I haven't. She's
really? Flawless 10.
I will now watch Italy.
Flawless 10 for Italy. Yes, really? Flawless 10. Yes, that's the only reason
why
I watched.
Wait, sure. She got
everything.
She got everything.
She's from Africa, if I'm not mistaken.
There we go. That's it.
Yes, flawless. But she is flawless. His fiance is flawless. I don't mean to gawk over another man's fiance or woman in general, but
she's flawless. It's okay. It happens, man. This is what goes down.
That's my
sports and girls.
Yeah,
in the world.
That was my only reason for watching the Italy and England soccer contest.
Football. You gotta say football.
Football. Yes, football. U.S. They play again. What, Friday?
I don't know.
Yeah, that shows you just how much I don't care. But it's curious. I'm curious to know anyone you know who's listening or follows the show on Facebook. I'm curious to know just how excited from 1 to 10 are you for the World Cup? Will you get emotionally invested when the U.S. plays? If the U.S. goes far, will you be happy and celebrate? Do you throw World Cup parties? You know, like during the match they flashed out to Chicago and San Francisco and Pennsylvania and New York, showing large gatherings and congregations of people sitting together and watching the game on big screens. And I was like, you people are crazy. I mean, I will say that because I just don't have the love for the sport, even though I am starting to acquire more knowledge and about the strategy and things of that nature. But yeah, it just doesn't tickle my fancy. Just doesn't get me there on a when it comes to my sports fan barometer.
For me, obviously, soccer is soccer to me. I love basketball, football, and baseball. I'm an Americanized African. I'm an Americanized Nigerian, and so I don't relate to like what's going on in soccer. But I will say this though, I've learned with the greatness of social media, how many people who live in urban areas who don't know two rats you know what about soccer, when the U.S. was up 1-0, like U.S. go, let's go USA. I was like, dude, you don't know nothing about soccer. Who scored the goal?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't even know. And then when they won 2-1, it was like, let's go USA. Yeah. Like, I was on social media when Nigeria was playing Iran. I was like, let's go Niger. And then I had in parentheses, like, I give a damn. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care. I mean, I am rooting for Nigeria to win the World Cup. But will I race home to watch Nigeria play if I can? No, I won't. I won't speed to go home to watch Nigeria play in the World Cup.
You know what's funny? You're talking about that. At my former place of occupation, I worked. It was very diverse. Very diverse ethnically. And I remember 4 years ago when the World Cup was on, just about everyone stopped work and went, and they have like a big meeting room where they have a projector. And people were going there, would take their laptops in there and work and order lunch and just sit right there and just watch soccer. Now, fast forward, now rewind to March of that year. Now, when the NCAA tournament was on, I was all for it. I was sitting there and people were like, you really going to sit here and do work from here today? Yeah. And they were, and I asked them the same question. You really going to sit here and work all day and watch soccer? Yeah. So I guess to each his own. You know, some people are very passionate about soccer and about baseball. Some people are passionate about basketball, football, golf, tennis, boxing, no matter what it is.
Hold on. Did you just compare March Madness to World Cup?
Yes, I did. Because for some people, it's bigger. For those who don't, who are outside of the USA, Cup is much bigger than March Madness.
I'm sure. I'm not knocking that. But I would say for me, that's impossible. It's impossible. The reason why I'm saying it's impossible because I can make a profit off March Madness. I don't know what kind of pools you have when it comes to World Cup. March Madness pool, because I ain't going to lie. After a certain round or whatever gets into the World Cup, then you kind of, if you then you go into the tournament. There's too much going on. Like, too much going on in the World Cup to me. Mm-hmm. To break down, to even get to a point to make some money. You know what I mean? March Madness, we did knocked off the BS with the conference tournament. That's done. You give me that field is 68, then now we can play. Now it's go time. I mean, now I can make my profit. Now it's like I'm Johnny Football. I'm rubbing my money. Show me the money. So, I mean, for me, obviously, I sound like a sellout to you Nigerian listeners. It's okay. It's true. This is my personal belief. This is what I believe in, all right? I'm taking March Madness. I'm racing. I'm taking days off from March Madness. World Cup.
Oh, do you ever?
Oh, do I? Oh, do I? You know what I mean? I'm that unproductive government worker. So, in all honesty, yeah, I understand it. I understand it being big, to be honest with you. It's the world's game. So in that regard, I understand. It's the world in riots for this.
I will say one thing about
the passion
football. Yeah, the passion of the fans is amazing from around the world. And, you know, in the U.S., people think that there are some really crazed sports fans / fanatics. But in certain corners of the world, when it comes to football, specifically the World Cup, people are extremely passionate and will go to great extents to express and show their passion for their team and their country.
You don't know Dilly in terms of passion. If you ain't involved with soccer event, that's passion, especially in the hosting country. And we're down to pregame. The Kansas Brandon Flowers, which surprised me.
It didn't surprise me because there had been reports that they were trying to shop him during the time of the draft. He's not Andy Reid likes bigger corners. Brandon Flowers is like 5'10". He had like a $5.5 million cap hit this year. So it didn't necessarily surprise me. Even though he's coming off of a Pro Bowl season, and you know, cornerbacks are at a premium in this league just because it's a passing league now. There are reports out that at least
teams
reached out to him and tried to establish a rapport to have conversations about him joining those teams. A few of the rumored teams were the Redskins, the Baltimore Ravens.
And the Ravens are hot. Ravens are hot on them.
I want to say the Atlanta Falcons, a couple of other teams. Those are the teams that kind of caught my eye when I saw it. You know, we brought up your team.
The Redskins.
Yeah.
You mentioned.
Do you think that the Washington football team should be burning up his agent's phone line to initiate contact and bring him in for a visit.
You know, I'm wary on it. I want him, but then I'm thinking that who would get benched? Because what's my guy's name?
Amerson.
Yeah, I'm all for David Amerson. You know, starting and make D. Hall have to go in the slot. Well, which I have no problem with that anyway.
Well, since this is a passing league and most teams, their general pack, their basic formation is three wide receivers. So he would see a lot of action, you know, if the Washington football team decided to go nickel.
Keep calling the Redskins. It's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
I know it's not.
It's nothing wrong.
I'm trying not
to. You're trying not to. It's okay. Keep calling the Redskins.
If they want to start out in a nickel package, which actually, if you think about it, could be one of the better things for them because you would be able to get Jason Hatcher, maybe put Arakpo with his hand on the ground, maybe put Kerrigan with his hand on the ground, and put Trent Murphy out there
at the same time.
Time.
I like Giants football.
Yeah, so you would have rushes out, and you would also have probably two of your better defensive players in D'Angelo Hall and Brandon Flowers out there.
See, I would, but I guess I am leaning towards it. Another role, we're talking about a guy who was a Pro Bowl cornerback, and the secondary need, he's not up there in age. A situation where, honestly, it's if the price is right, go for it. But you know, obviously, the money situation with the Washington Redskins isn't. You know, they're trying to be more. They're trying to be intelligent.
Frugal.
Yeah, there you go. Frugal. You call it frugal with their money.
Whatever you want to call it.
You know what I mean? So
tomato, tomato.
But I would definitely like to see him. See him in DC, if that's a possibility. He would make the secondary better. Also, mini camp start. So honest football, that football swag. Because yeah, right now, you know, basketball season's over, so I'm trying to get into football.
Yeah, we're about to enter a very interesting time in sports because this is the dead period of the year.
Honestly, it is.
Yeah, it is. After the NBA, think about it. The NBA draft is next Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of next Thursday, all teams will be completed their mini camp. So training camp doesn't start until the end of July.
Exactly.
You have baseball. This is the time for baseball to really capitalize and really put themselves out there in front of people. But that's just not happening because there's no great team or no dominant performance this year in baseball.
It doesn't really even matter, to be totally honest with you. As a baseball fan, I'm a big baseball fan, and I'm just being real with the masses. Let's just go with the masses. This is a dead time for sports, period. To be honest with you, because I finished up playing basketball I finished playing basketball today during my lunch break. And see, I threw that in. And me and this dude had this conversation. He, you know, was a baseball fan, but we were talking. He was like, "Yeah, man, I might as well cut off my cable. Basketball season's over. Like, there's nothing to watch." And I was like, "You know, then that's the mass. That's the masses. Like, that's the majority of sports fans. When basketball season is over, and I'm just gonna speak for African Americans. When basketball season is over, it's over. Like, sports is over for folks."
Yeah, because and that's a very truthful statement you made, just because baseball isn't played in a majority of the inner cities.
Yeah.
It's become a game of I wouldn't say a game of privilege in the U.S.,
no.
But I don't think it reaches as far as basketball.
Yeah, and to expound on that more, I don't even think in many areas people play baseball like you would play basketball out like street ball.
Yeah, because
when I was younger, we used to do that. But nowadays, to me, period, I think in my opinion, I think within all races, people don't play it out and about just for fun anymore.
No, absolutely not. During the 40s and 50s and 60s, absolutely. But nowadays, these kids don't have friends. Their friends are on Facebook.
Facebook.
So they're not going to get – they don't have 21 other people they're going to invite to play baseball.
And they're playing video games.
Exactly.
I mean? I'm just being real. So it's not like you call your friend up like, "Hey, man, let's play some baseball. Let's play some baseball. Let's gather about a good – not even gonna say 20. Let's gather a good, like, 10 people. And we could just like play around. It'd be a small field, but we'll just play around, see what we can do." That doesn't happen anymore. You know what I mean?
Absolutely not.
That's amazing. And you know, because even when I grew up in Spring Hill Lake in Greenbelt, we had a baseball field in Spring Hill Lake Elementary. I mean, it's right there. It's a baseball field, kickball field, baseball field, about the same thing. So we used to play baseball. I used to grab about a couple of kids in the neighborhood. I had a bat and tennis ball. I didn't actually have a real baseball, a tennis ball. We go out and play baseball. I mean, people suck, but they still have fun doing it. You know what I mean? So it's different, man. It's a different beast. But speaking of baseball, the Orioles catcher Matt Wieters, but I didn't say Manny Machado. Matt Wieters will have season-ending surgery, Tommy John surgery, actually.
I don't know why there's such a high occurrence of people having Tommy John surgery in baseball. I would love to see the statistics on some type of study to kind of quantify that. You know, is it because
why?
Yeah, I mean, is it because of the way that, you know, I know for pitchers it might be, you know, because they're overextending their arms, mm-hmm, in the multiple leagues that they're playing in, or they might, you know, they've kind of gone away from traditional methods of strength training that's affecting the strength of their arm. But it's just a lot of people are getting Tommy John surgery. It's kind of like people are saying, "All right, better get it, rather get it early,
younger,
so you can mend up,
mm-hmm,
so you can mend to become back stronger, than wait later on in your career to get it."
Pitchers, I think pitchers have been babied, so I mean, any inkling of pain is Tommy John surgery. And also, in my opinion, I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just, you know, I just don't trust folks in the world. But I think these surgeons just be pushing it on folks. I think some of these individuals can actually still play. But this is a way to keep their name in the spotlight. And it's a way to make money. So they're going to say, okay, this individual needs Tommy John surgery. I mean, Tommy John surgery is famous, man. Like, seriously. Like, yeah. Steven Strasburg. I know the Orioles, Dylan Bundy. You got folks, well-known names, well-known prospects, excuse me, are getting this on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's kind of like, just go ahead and have it now.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can come back stronger. Have it before you're like 25. Extend your career.
But I'm just going to speak how it affects the Orioles. Honestly, like, obviously losing Matt Wieters hurts because he had such a good start to the season. It was a contract season, so a good start to the season. And you were talking about one of the best in the game, probably one of the best star catchers in the game, period. And he was off. He was starting to hit offense. He was starting to hit. So you were getting him playing a high level defensively and getting him playing a high level offensively. This is a big hit for the Baltimore Orioles. Now they've had good play from Caleb Joseph up, and he's played decent. He's been tremendous as a defensive catcher. Hunley, they got in the Diego Padres, who's been a good backup catcher. So they now have, I feel, depth in that position. From the starter to the backup, and they also have Clevenger still in the minor. So they have depth in the catcher position. Now, again, it still doesn't equal having Matt Wieters in the lineup, because I think Matt Wieters brings fear to opposing pitchers because he has power. But we'll see how it pans out. I posed the question on Facebook on the Orioles Bird Zone Facebook group. I like having Caleb as our starting catcher. He's phenomenal. He has phenomenal defense. Slugger back. Okay. This is, excuse me, Jr. in the big leagues. He's in the same steps as Manny Machado, getting called up from AAA right into the minors. Straight into the majors. He just has to get used to playing stats in Bowie and, Bowie. His bat will come around. He will always be known as a backup. He's not a full-time starter. So I'm with Chad. I like Caleb Joseph as a defensive catcher. I think he's a great defensive catcher. He's starting to hit the ball now. But I like him as a defensive catcher. People aren't still bases on it. So yeah, I'm Joseph. Thanks, Chad. Appreciate the comment on Facebook. Hope you have much appreciated.
Yeah, much appreciated. Very well thought out. Comment.
It really is.
Yeah, it was.
Anyway, down to pregame. Nats Cashmos is back. What should Nats do with this dude? Seriously.
When he's in the lineup, he's productive, and you know, back end when he's catching, he works well with the pitchers. The pitchers seem to really enjoy working with him, and he's very effective when he's calling the game at home plate. But you know, the pattern is clear. You know, he's become.
He's injury prone.
I wasn't going to say soft, but he's very injury prone. But, you know, when he's in the lineup, he's productive with his glove. So I guess you have to wait. Have Jose Louboutin.
Louboutin,
who's playing pretty good for a backup catcher. Yeah. But if this team is going to, you know, levels that everyone has predicted, you know, 90 plus wins, NL East pennant, World Series. He's going to have to stay healthy and stay in the lineup. You know, also, with including him, you know, you also have Bryce Harper, who's out, who's starting to make his return. You know.
When is he supposed to come back?
They don't have a timetable. Okay. He's starting to
now.
So, you know, it could be like a couple weeks before the All-Star game or something like that, you know, if I had to put a best estimate to it. But, geez. I don't know. I had a breeze.
I can save you right now. Don't worry about it. I saw Wilson Ramos play in Minnesota with Matt when Joe Mauer went down. Was very impressed with him. He was hitting over 300, and then Mauer came back. And eventually, they traded him to the Nats. Thought pickup for the Nats, and he's played well with the Nats when he's in the starting lineup. He has a good offensive bat. He can catch. He can throw runners out. And that's what you want. That's what you want in your catcher. Now, him being injury prone is scary, because if it ain't one thing, it's something else. You know what I mean? When it comes to Wilson Ramos, so hopefully the Nats can get him 100%. Because I'll say this, you know, the Nats have had a snake bitten season with injuries, but they've they've kind of tread waters, and now they're at a point where now they're still competing for first place with the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah. Now I got my thought. Thanks for picking up.
No problem.
No, I was gonna say, coming off of the that 3-1 series win off of the San Francisco Giants in San Francisco, a lot of people were starting to become very optimistic and thought this was the point where they're going to turn it around. But, then once again come those dreaded St. Louis Cardinals who swept them, and now they start a series tonight in Nats Park against the Astros, I believe. And then this weekend they have their division rivals, the Atlanta Braves.
Don't look past the Astros. The Astros have been playing good ball of late. I mean, not the best team in the world, but they've been playing good ball. Again, the Nats, obviously they're just trying to get healthy. They got Zim back. The pitching has been swell. So
especially Tanner Roark.
Yeah, Tanner Roark has been good. Fister's been good too.
Fister's been good, even though
he got rocked the last one. Yeah, but
last game. But for your four and five pitchers to be producing at the level that Fister and Roark have, that's tremendous, and that's something definitely people should pay attention to and be optimistic about. Now you need to get Gio back, and then
Gio is back. I thought he came back already.
No, he didn't. I believe he had a start in Potomac recently. Recently. But yeah, if you can get Strasburg to get out of those first couple of innings, and then if Gio comes back strong, and then you also, Zimmerman's a workhorse, and then you have Roark and Fister pitching the way that they're pitching, things could shape up pretty nice for this team.
Again, it's all predicated on them getting healthy. So hopefully, you need your catcher to maintain that pitching staff. They can get Ramos back. It's the hamstring injury. Take your time with it, and hopefully he has a full season so this team can make that run. I mean, they aim to beat the Braves. That's the goal right now for the Nats. Aim to beat the Braves so they can win the NL East.
Yep, that should be the goal.
All right, man. It's about time for a commercial break. When we get back, we're going to recap the NBA Finals. I think our prediction was incorrect. Very incorrect. We both had the Miami Heat win the series, and the San Antonio Spurs straight up dominated.
It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
This is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
Yeah! For the first time, it's going down history, baby. New 3-6 Mafia. Featuring 8-Ball and MJG, Young Buck, it's a Tennessee thing, we gotta stay,
till I die, I gotta stay, till I die, I gotta stay, till I die, I gotta stay. Riding in the car with some bumper in the trunk. Them a laugh and you know it's breaking down the good. Get up here tight, girl, say I'm the man. Ice on the wrist with the ice in the chain. Ride through the hood, yeah, I'm gripping the grain. In the same while I'm changing the lane. I feel tight cause I'm choking the
picture messed up cause I'm messing with a D-boy riding them big toys. Make your man gal wanna get on the team. She gotta give it up once she get in my car. I ain't Denzel, but I know I'm a star. Cause when I'm in the club, I be back in the bar. Yeah. The VIP bar, and be buying the bar.
Yeah. DJ the bar. Paul is a dog, one you do not trust. You leave your around me, yo, don't get it. You leave your drink around me, but leave your drink, don't get drunk up. You leave your girl around me, and she bad, she gonna get these the spies, we let them lie. Keep them lies tied, tied, ride what they like. Make a couple of numbers, a couple of songs. And swallow it down with the herbal, get herbal, get herbal. It's going down.
I gotta stay fly. Until I die.
So I'm a big 3-6 fan. I love 3-6. That's why I had to have it going on for a minute.
I had no problem with that.
I remember when 3-6 came to town years ago. The first time I ever seen 3-6 was at Pearl Lounge in D.C. It was myself.
Bladensburg Road?
Not in D.C.? Bladensburg Road? That's what it was. I think the old Posh. That's not Bladensburg Road.
I'm not sure.
Not that place. Okay. It was the old Posh nightclub. Lounge. The old Posh. It was Pearl, then it turned into Posh, I believe. This is when we used to go to. We used to go and get it for free. You remember that place we was getting for free?
Oh, the Saturday nights?
Yeah, we was getting it for free. Yeah. All right. So, anyway, I think who was with me? It was myself. It was Ray. It had to be Ray. Myself, Ray. Let me shut this down. Myself, Ray. I want to. Maybe Brian. I'm not sure. Anyway, we were all out there. It was cool. You know, I was all hype. You know, they. You know, 3-6 was there. I was like, oh my God, 3-6. And then, all right. So then I told Harold, Jew, our friend, our mutual friend of the show too. They come to Bowie. I told Jew. Like Jew was like, damn man, I missed out on them. So Jew. So they came perform in Bowie, Bowie State University. Never forget this. And I take that back. It wasn't in Bowie State. It was at Pearl. Juice saw Country Black. It was like, Country Black, Country Black, Country Black. He was ecstatic because Juice was actually, truth be told, Juice was a bigger 3-6 fan than me. So Juice was like, Country Black. I mean, like a groupie. Country Black, Country Black, Country Black. And if you've been to Pearl Nightclub, basically Pearl Lounge, excuse me, it's, you know, they're right there. It's close. You can damn near reach them. You know what I mean? In Bowie, you couldn't reach him, but you can damn near reach him. Jew was ecstatic, you know what I mean? Then the second time he went out with it, he tried to say it with a deep voice, Country, that's Country Black right there.
it's amazing how the sight of celebrities can turn regular, functioning, intelligent human beings to a school-age girl.
It's the truth, though. It is. It really is. You can really, your demeanor can change. It really can. I only can imagine how I reacted if I ever seen Michael Jackson perform in person.
Yeah, that's one thing I would have loved to seen is Michael Jackson perform in person.
Yeah. I would never be an individual. I don't think I would ever act like a hyped up fool if I seen a particular player in my age. Well, I know when T.I. came, I was really excited. But I don't think I was a screamer like
I think
was crazy.
There's only one.
Who, Jay-Z?
No, athlete. No, Muhammad Ali.
Oh, if you met him in person?
If I met Muhammad Ali, I'd be ecstatic.
I know mine. It's easy. Magic Johnson. If I met Magic Johnson in person, I'm a punk. I'm a punk. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't think I can even talk. I don't think I get a sentence in. I'd be like, okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because that's one dude, that's on my bucket list. Like, I need to meet Magic Johnson before I leave this world. I need to autograph my jersey. And I need to tell him, like, to stop saying that you're not the best player ever because you ruin my argument every time you open your mouth.
Yeah, also for people who are listening on Facebook, just drop us a note. Let us know if you have met a famous athlete or celebrity, how did you act? Or would you act, or what famous person would send you kind of into that schoolgirl kind of frenzy if you met him?
Exactly. And then you can call in, too, if you want to the even have your comment about that. It's 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. You can also listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.walio.podbean.com. So you're probably listening to it now if you're listening. You're probably there now if you're listening. Excuse me. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Career Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stiller Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Stiller Fan.
Okay, people, we're going to keep it real with y'all. As we stated earlier in the show, you know, we're coming upon the dead period of sports. So that's why there are only going to be two segments for this show.
Yeah.
There was the pregame. Then we're going to talk NBA Finals, and we may talk a little bit of boxing because DMV's on Gary Russell Jr. He's fighting for, I believe, the WBA lightweight championship on Saturday on Showtime. So we may get into that a little bit. But, yeah, the pregame and NBA Finals is pretty much what you're going to get tonight.
Yeah, exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that. You'll enjoy it. You'll love it. You'll dig it. And you'll say thank you.
Absolutely. So let's get into it.
All right, man. Thoughts of the Spurs Heat final. Spurs winning the championship in five.
I think, you know, I think both of us predicted that the Heat would win. I thought the Heat would win in seven again, like they did last year. And I believe your prediction was six. Neither one of us were close, anywhere close. But one thing that I thought it would have been interesting to see. We watched game one of the finals together.
Yeah.
And when LeBron James went out with the cramp, it would have been interesting to see how that final 4 or 5 minutes of the game would have played out if he hadn't had that cramp. Because just realistically, you possibly could have been talking about the Heat up 2-0. But
yeah.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, but shoulda, woulda, coulda. So I don't really like to deal in the hypothetical. All I can deal in is what actually happened, the factual. What happened was, I think a lot of us who were pro Heat, we got a little bit overconfident of the best player in the NBA playing with a team that, you know, compared to their last two championships, wasn't up to snuff versus the best team in basketball. A team that, if you look at it, doesn't have any weaknesses, does everything. You know, I was having a conversation with someone and a young lady, and she's not, you know, she's a very casual sports fan. She was going for the Heat too.
The most annoying people.
Yeah. She was like, wow, what did the Spurs do so great opposed to the Heat? And I told her, I was like, when it comes to moving the ball and spacing the floor and dribble drives and creating open shots, the Spurs are A+, but everything else that the Spurs do, they're A. So this is a team that doesn't have a lot of weaknesses at all.
No, Ron listened to the show. Ron was talking about he remembers that night about you acting like a little girl with 3-6 came out.
So, man.
Thanks, Jew, man. Appreciate it, Ron.
Jew, if you're listening, so that wasn't a made-up story.
It's the truth, man.
It's been confirmed.
Hey, go ahead. Go, my bad, Will. Go ahead.
Nah, but like I said, those things they do, they're A+. They're better at anyone else in the NBA doing. But everything else that they do, every other aspect of the game, they're A.
Yeah.
So they're A or A- at the worst. So you just had the better prepared, the better team. You know, they didn't have necessarily the best talent, but the better team.
Yeah, all-around team.
All-around team came out, and they just put together those last three games that we really haven't seen in the NBA Finals because they won all three of those last closeout games by 15 points plus.
Hey, first off, Ron, you want to chime in, man. You allowed to chime in. Call in, Ron. But, man, that game, I was thinking the same thing. Like, if LeBron didn't have those cramps, game it could have been 2-0. But you never know. Pop probably made an adjustment. Game 2 probably been different. So you never know. Pop was making adjustments left and right.
Absolutely.
My problem with the series, the Spurs were a better team. They dominated the series. It was what it was. They're the better team. My problem with the series was that Eric Spoelstra refused to make adjustments after losing in Game 3. After getting beat handily, not just getting beat, but getting handled in by a dub at home. If he was on the road, it would be different. At home, and you refused to make an adjustment, it just showed me that as a coach, like, Pop is, you know, we already know Pop's the better coach, but Pop was 10 times better than this dude, and this dude wasn't prepared for a San Antonio team. And that was my issue. You can't make adjustments just because you're down 3-1. Treat game after game, you're down 2-1, you have to treat game 4 like a do-or-die game. He treated game 4 like, oh, my Heat can still we can still, you know, do some good things against a Popovich team. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just had this. You know, I don't want to have a blonde moment and forget my thought. Not that it's just so profound or anything. I think what happens is he kind of get, you know, as do most coaches and fans of the game, you get cocky when you have that amount of individual talent. And you think, okay, this individual talent is going to supersede anything that the San Antonio Spurs are doing.
Hold on. Hello?
To accept, press 1.
I see, always get this little accept thing. I thought I tried it before it aired up. Hello?
Hey, Walt.
My man, Big Ron, is now on with the Urban Sports thing. Had to have a man on the show. I'm sorry. So, Ron, since you're a LeBron hater, I want you to go ahead and talk about what you thought about the Spurs and the Heat series.
What's up, Will?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Country Black! That joke was so funny. I'm sorry.
But, like, people don't realize, like, he was actually reaching out for Country Black.
Yeah, like, Jew was really reaching out for him.
Not only did he have the high-pitched voice, but he was
reaching out. Yeah,
yes.
For Country Black? Oh, my God.
Yes, not Juicy J, not DJ Paul, but for Country Black.
Right, Country Black. The family that kicked out the
group. You know what I mean? That thing was hilarious, man. Me, Ron, and Ray kept that joke like going on for like forever. But every time we see you, Country Black!
So we all look at each other like, are you serious?
Are you serious? And I'm a big 3-6 fan like the next person, but I'm sitting here like, are you serious, Jew? Like, Jew couldn't control him. He couldn't control himself. But anyway, Ron, let's talk about the finals, man.
Will just made a great point about Coach Spo and how, you know, he kind of like he was cocky, you know, thinking that, you know, hey, LeBron, Wade, and Ray Allen and Bosh, they'll make the adjustments for him. He didn't have to change the lineup because he thought those guys would just, you know, wake up and start to play basketball.
Yeah, but see, this is my – go ahead, Ron, my bad. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, see, this is my thing with the whole situation, though. As a coach, all right, being arrogant and cocky, you see that your bench isn't scoring. Like, you see that Ray Allen. Ray Allen had to be he tried to be Ray Allen in Milwaukee, Seattle. Like, he was trying to do things as a ball handler, and he did a good job at it. I'm not going to knock him for it. He did a good job at it. But you see that your bench isn't producing. Why do you have a Greg Oden who you're not going to play, and we know you're not going to play, suit up rather than having a Michael Beasley suit up, or you have a Tony Douglas suit up? Go ahead.
Well, because one, he hasn't done that all year, so he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, I mean, we had this conversation a couple of weeks ago when OKC lost to the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about Scottie Brooks and his bench and how he doesn't use them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like Pop knows how to use those guys.
Mm-hmm.
That guy from 6, 7, 8, 9 on the bench, because he practices it all year. That's why he always changes his lineup. That's why you might see on a 4-game road trip, the 4th game, he'll sit a Ginobili, a Duncan, and Parker.
Well, for me, and you make a great point, for me, the one substitution that I think he could have went to quicker that would have helped LeBron James get LeBron James and Dwayne Wade get into the lane was he should have probably went with putting Ray Allen and James Jones on the floor, because you have those two guys with Chris Bosh, you could stretch out the floor because you have three guys whose game is really tailored towards sitting behind a three-point line and knocking down open shots. That if you take those three with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, that creates a lot of space for you to get into the lane and for LeBron to get into the lane and slash and, you know, get the easier floaters when he gets 1 foot into the lane.
But didn't he try James Jones? My memory serves me correct. I thought he tried him.
He tried, but let me add to that. But like, Wally, we watched game 2 at Jasper's. And that
no free publicity. No free publicity on this show.
LeBron dominated the first half by in the paint. You know, he was mm-hmm. working the post, the mid-range post. But he didn't do that for the rest of the series. Now, to piggyback on Will, if you put a Ray Allen on the floor with a Bosh at 5, a James Jones, put LeBron in the post.
Yeah, I hear you.
Because they're going to have to double him. He's the best passer guard in the game, you know. He'll basically be Magic Johnson or Jason Kidd working out of the post.
Yeah. This was my
and that way, point. when they double, you know, you got shooters around you.
Yeah. And Kawhi Leonard wasn't doing a good job with him in the post when the game we're watching. This is my issue. No, he wasn't. Again, we were watching Kawhi Leonard wasn't doing anything with him in the post. But what annoyed me about Spoelstra, you won two championships back to back with two dudes who you decided not to even play. Udonis Haslam. I'm not even talking. I'm a Beasley fan. I love Beasley's game, but I'm not going to talk about Beasley. I'm going to be real. Udonis Haslam, Shane Battier. You don't even play these guys in the finals. You really don't play them. It's like your you have no method to your madness. It's like you're always reacting. You're always reacting. You're not proactive. You're not letting the Spurs adjust to what you do. You're always adjusting to what they have to do. So it's like when I'm watching Spoelstra, he's not letting this team dictate play. This team can't dictate play. I remember listening to you, Ron. I think it was on Facebook or whatever, and you said, and you were right. The Heat are trying to be the Spurs. Like, they're trying to pass like the Spurs. That's not their game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Their game is to attack by any means necessary. If Chris Bosh gets by Tim Duncan, Chris Bosh should be able to try to pull up or take it to the basket, not trying to find LeBron for an extra bounce pass.
Right.
And vice versa. And same for Dwayne Wade. When Dwayne Wade is going to the hole, he needs to attack, not trying to be the Spurs and have that extra hockey pass. That's not what they do. That's what the Spurs do. Do what's brought you to the dance. Which has given you two championships in a row. They saw what the Spurs were doing, and they tried to emulate the San Antonio Spurs. Again, coaching plays a part in that, in my opinion. Like, Spoelstra in this series showed me he was more to me because the ball, even the movement was terrible. He showed me more so what he did with the Dallas Mavericks. That's how I looked at his coaching.
Yeah,
I had more respect. I had more respect for him as a coach against San Antonio last year than I did this season.
No,
I think last year Pop just overcoached.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Not only that, I think they became so enamored and in love with what they had, they didn't go out and say, okay, this thing could potentially be that one little string could be coming out, so maybe we need to tug at it and add some pieces, get younger, do some things differently offensively to bring a new perspective and change things up for this team.
And this is the thing we're talking about in terms of not utilizing your bench. I don't care. You took a flyer on Greg Oden and Michael Beasley. Try to play them. Like, I'm not even talking about the postseason. In the regular season, try to play them. Like, you can't go, especially when your bench is an older bench. Like, you don't have a young bench. You have an older bench, all right? You need young legs. Play them. Try to get them involved. That's what Pop does with San Antonio. He plays his bench, like, if they're getting blown out, or he thinks this game is already over in the second quarter, he's like, okay, screw it. Patty Mills, just go play. Thiago Splitter, go play. I mean, he played Joseph. These players have gained confidence off stuff like that alone because Pop is willing to play these guys, and they get to a point in the season, they're like, well, we're comfortable now. We've been in games. We've helped this team come back and from big leads because Pop believes in us. Like, that's the difference between Pop and a Spoelstra. Spoelstra is more, I'm going to have this set regiment and this, that, and the other. And I am going to rely on the great LeBron James to carry my team to win a championship. I'm going to put all of my energy on LeBron James to be great, which is different from any – if you watch any championship coach, this is my problem with Spoelstra, all championship coaches that we deem great coaches never do that to their superstar. Never, ever. Phil Jackson didn't do it with Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and Shaq, especially when he had Kobe for the second time. The second tier, he told Kobe, like, get Powell involved. Let Lamar do this. Like, let Bynum get some touches. Like, they never put the onus on one dude to be special on every night during the finals. Because you really want to, if you want to break it down, let's go into the Lakers-Boston series. In Game 7, Kobe was off. But you can rely on Ron Artest. You can rely on Lamar Odom. You can rely on Pau Gasol. That's the reason why they won that series.
And not to mention that Kobe did. He knew he was off, so he did other things.
Exactly. So
I think he ended up with like 12 rebounds and 8 assists.
Exactly. But you don't. But you don't rely on one dude to be special. Period.
All right. Let me ask both of y'all a question since we all here and we talking about the Heat going forward. we all know that the big three can opt out in the free agency. That to me, the growing sentiment that LeBron James isn't going anywhere. I think that's would you say that's accurate, or would you guys think? Do you guys?
I'm gonna let Ron go first. Ron, go first. Ron.
Yeah, I'm here. What was the whole question?
Do you think LeBron go elsewhere? Do you think LeBron's going elsewhere?
LeBron's funny. I have no idea.
Exactly.
I mean, LeBron's a funny dude. So
I would say the same.
Well, I think
LeBron's a funny dude, but personally, why would you leave Pat Riley?
Yeah, and that's kind of my
Pat Riley ain't coaching them, man. Eric Spoelstra's coaching them. That's why I would leave.
Nah, but the thing is, if Pat Riley's already shown that he can bring talent around you.
Oh, okay.
So in Cleveland, you didn't have that situation. You couldn't bring me any talent. You couldn't draft anyone. You couldn't bring in free agents. The allure of South Beach in itself will bring you the free agents.
That's all you had to say. Want. That's all you had to say. So,
I mean, just having that. Just imagine walking into Pat Riley's office. And he has how many rings just sitting on his desk? And then he has Alonzo Mourning on the outside of the office making sure you don't leave.
Very good point.
You said kind of.
I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Alonzo,
it's like,
being,
you know,
Devo?
you're not going to. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to say no to Pat, if you know what I'm saying. But if you look at the free agents, I mean, they can easily rebuild their team.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Man, a Beasley's a free agent. But to me, it all depends on Wade. Wade has to take less money.
That's within a rumor. That's another rumor for itself. But for me, you know, I had this conversation with somebody, and at first I said I told this individual that I don't think LeBron is going to leave because it would be a bad decision. It would be a bad move career wise for him. Just because you don't want to be that dude that's like a hired gun. If you want to be the all-time, the best ever or whatever, you don't want to keep jumping from team to team.
Deion did it in football.
Yes, football is different, though. It's a different beast.
Okay.
All right. So, but again, if he, the only place I think he can go, excuse me, and it wouldn't be a concern because he has to win a championship there, though, would be Cleveland. Because if he won a championship in Cleveland, then he can say, dude, I'm the only dude to win a championship in Cleveland. Like, I brought that to Cleveland. I brought that to my home.
He can go to New York.
No, it's okay. I can bring that to my hometown. That's a major market. I mean, he could go to New York. I might knock him, but it's different, though. People with – you would still have you would still have haters come out there and say, well, he had to go to New York. He had to go to a big market. If he went back to Cleveland and did it with a team that never won a championship, that's been irrelevant in basketball in the grand scheme of things since he left, and it's been a relevant period for most of my years watching basketball, then, yeah, I think LeBron, that's one place I think LeBron can go and say, all right, it can build to his image. It can build on the whole brand of LeBron James.
Yeah, that's very true, but let me finish up the question. All right, let's say, you know, LeBron doesn't opt out, stays in. Dwayne Wade opts out and says, okay, I know I'm not the player I once was. I don't need $20 million. For 9 or $10 million.
$40 million is owed to him. He better not opt out. That'd be stupid.
Well, I mean, what if he says, I want to still continue to chase championships? Because you got to remember that his shoe line is created in China. And in China, they value championships.
No, but he would still be at Miami Heat. He'll be there.
No, but I'm saying, so let's say he decides to opt out and says, I only need $10 million or $9 million. What do the Heat do with that extra $10 million in free agency?
So what does Chris Bosh do?
Chris Bosh says, I'm getting paid.
He's staying.
He's staying. He's going to get it. But Dwayne Wade says, I know I'm not the player I used to be. I only need $10 million. What do they do with that extra $10 million?
Well, I'm going to tell you this much. If Chris Bosh – I don't know what that is. Excuse me. If Chris Bosh – if Dwayne Wade doesn't opt out, excuse me, I don't know what this is. Let me end this call. There you go. All right, there you go. Done. If Dwayne Wade, it was a bill collector. If Dwayne, just being real. If Chris Bosh doesn't opt out, Dwayne Wade's not opting out. That I will guarantee. Damn, Slim, I told you I ain't paying you. Get out of my face. Is Ron still there? Hello? I think I hung up on Ron by accident. Hey, Ron, call back, man. My bad. Bill Collector's still trying to get me, man. But it goes back. No, if Dwayne Wade doesn't opt, if Chris Boston opt out, Dwayne Wade's definitely he's not opting out. If both of them will, if one opts out, in my opinion, they both will opt out.
I can see a scenario
because I think they are. If Dwayne Wade opts out, then there's a plan. There's a plan brewing to get you know who into South Beach.
Who was that?
And that's Carmelo Anthony. If Dwayne Wade opts out, because that means he's going to work his contract. That means Chris Bosh will do the same thing. In my opinion, Chris Bosh will do the same thing, and then he'll be back under contract. I mean, then they'll be attacking Carmelo Anthony and trying to get him into South Beach.
People would be sick if Carmelo Anthony, because you got to think about it, yeah. That's four of the top five draft picks from that class.
I feel like it's some NWO type stuff. I feel like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, this has always been the making. Like, it's a plan. They planned this. If they get Melo, it was a plan brewing for a minute. That's how they get it. If they get Melo.
I think people will say it's bad for the league because you have four superstars on the same team. I don't think that's that. I think you have four smart, intelligent African-American businessmen that wanted to chase a championship together. And
there's nothing wrong with trying to win a championship. There's no knock on Melo for trying to win a championship that way. I don't have any issue with Melo doing that. Like, if Melo feels that that's the best move for his career, go for it. Everybody's knocking Melo and say he can't win a big game. Why not? This is your chance. Like, I hate that people are like saying, "Oh well, you know, the people be sick of basketball if the big three do it." Like, if Miami, excuse me, the Heat bring a Melo to South Beach. Dude, if I'm Melo, I'm not worried about that. You guys crucify me in New York when I try to do everything it takes to help this team win and say I'm not a winner, I'm not a top-tier player. But best believe I win a championship in New York. In Miami, you all will talk differently about me. You'll say I'm a superstar basketball player.
All right, but let's talk about quite possibly the superstar of his time, Tim Duncan. That's five rings in 15 years, if I'm not mistaken, that the Spurs have won. Where do you rank him?
So I posed, real quick, before I give you my opinion, I posed the same question on Facebook on our Urban Sports Scene page. My man Jordan says top 10. My man Dan Urban says top 5. My man George says in the top 10, a very good case can be made that he belongs on the NBA's Mount Rushmore. And there's more comments I'll read off later. I think Tim Duncan, and I said this before, and I'm gonna keep saying it, is the best player of our era.
Totally agree with you.
Period. He has five championships. If this was Kobe Bryant, we'd be talking about him being one of the greatest of all time. This is my problem with the whole Tim Duncan debate. How come we don't talk about Tim Duncan being the greatest of all time? He has five championships, lost one final.
No, I think
he went against, and I always say this, like in the time when people praise Shaq and Kobe. When Tim Duncan was in his prime, when that team, that Lakers team was in their prime, Tim Duncan was the only dude that could take them dudes out. And this is before Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker were Manu was pretty good coming in. But this is before Tony Parker had a jump shot. And Tony Parker would have games where he didn't look good. Tim Duncan was the dominant player. And he used to beat that team.
Now, what I was going to say was you have to add on that during his span as a Spur, his team won 50 games every year.
Exactly.
Kobe Bryant, you know, he had some off years.
Yeah,
let's be honest about it. He had some off years. Now, you could say he didn't have the level of talent around him. But then if you look at outside of Parker and Ginobili, and we're not even going to say they're sure ballot Hall of Famers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm probably Parker now, but yeah.
Parker now. But there's no other guy that you could say he had a consistent Hall of Famer
other than
Parker and David in that first title.
David Robinson
and he was done.
He was done. He wasn't the same David Robinson. You know, after that injury, he wasn't the same David Robinson. I totally agree. Again, Tim Duncan to me, I don't think he gets the respect he deserves. He is one dude that I think should be, when we talk about the all-time greats, he should be up there. I actually have him ahead of Shaq and Kobe. And I'm being real. I have him ahead of Shaq and Kobe.
Well, I'll say this. I have him as the greatest power forward to ever play the game.
I mean, I think that's easy to me. I think that's not for you. I'm not knocking you. But that's when you pose that question about Tim Duncan, that's what people go to. They go, he's the best power forward of all time. scratch that. I want people to show him respect that he, you can arguably say that he's probably one of the best players of all time, well, period.
This is the thing, yeah, but if you say he's one of the best power forward of all times, then that starting five of power, because I'm looking at it like this, then, you know, your starting five of the greatest players ever. Of course, you're going to have Jordan at the two. It's a debate between Russell or Chamberlain at the five. For me, surely it's Tim Duncan is the one guy that you would hear minimum debate over what his position being solidified in that starting five of the greatest players ever. Mm-hmm. Because you know you're gonna have people that are gonna argue, well, Magic or you know, Isaiah, things of that nature.
Magic's always gonna be Isaiah.
And then you always gonna have people
argument on Magic, Isaiah.
And then, you know, the argument when LeBron retires would be
he'll be the three. Yeah,
who will be the three? Will it be Bird, him? Will it be Durant? Bird. Or will it be Bird?
Yeah.
So to me, no questions, hands down, Tim Duncan is beat him, and you know, you'll hear debate about Oscar or Jordan at the two. The old school people are going to say Oscar.
Yeah, everybody loves Oscar.
Then, you know, people are going to say he averaged a triple-double. And then you're going to have the younger people saying six titles, didn't lose a championship. Mm. So, you know, to me, out of that starting five, Tim Duncan is the only you could say my starting four, you can't. There's little room for debate.
Pose the same question on another Facebook group, sports group. So Phil Washington says, in terms of integrity of sports, the same question that we were talking about. He said, in terms of integrity of the sport, number two behind Bill Russell. He's only known as a spur for winning basketball games. Michael Curtis says, definitely a top 10, consistent with his game five chips. Yeah, I guess championships. In a couple MVPs, Hall of Famer, complete career. John Evans says top 10 overall, best power forward of all time. The best power forward of all time isn't arguable to me. I mean, isn't it debatable? The man is the best power forward of all time.
All right, but one thing that some people tried to debate was the MVP of the finals, and the award was given to Kawhi Leonard, who had a phenomenal games 3, 4, and 5. Okay. 1 and 2 weren't that great. From a defensive or offensive perspective, but games 3, 4, and 5, he averaged something like 25 points, and I can't spew off the stat line off the top of my head, but do you think he's ready for the next level to ascend to being that, you know, where he kind of takes over to being that next great spur?
Time will see. I think. The system the Spurs run is conducive to what he can do. I do think he's a talented kid. I like to see him to create his own shot a little bit better for me to say he can ascend to that next level. That's my whole thing. I think he's missing is actually the creativity of creating his own shot. That's the thing.
I totally agree with you. He gets a lot of his shots off a great ball rotation. Just the plan, the scope, and the design of that offense. And, you know, not to say that he isn't a talented power forward.
Small
forward. Mm-hmm. Very good defender, very good rebounder, very good team player, defensive player. But, you know, he isn't asked to be an isolation player in that system. So there's still some question of can he create his own shot for himself and create a shot for others. But I do think, you know, you'll definitely see Popovich try to highlight him more to create plays for him, you know, down the stretch to get him buckets. And it'll be interesting to see how he comes through, you know, when, you know, next year specifically, because we all know that Manu's kind of losing the step. Tim Duncan isn't a spring chicken. Tony Parker, he's right in that peak of his athletic prime. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, just how Kawhi Leonard fares over the next couple of years. Does he, you know, transcend into the next Spurs All-Star?
Yeah, and I actually forgot. This actually, I have to go back to one. I'll go back to it later about Tim Duncan, because I want to read off one more person. I promise I'll read it off. But I'll do that towards the end of the show. Kawhi Leonard is a great defender. Right now he's a first-team all-defensive type caliber player. His jump shot has improved. So I don't want to say like Kawhi Leonard won't be a star, because I think he can be a star, because his work ethic has shown me that he's willing to work on his game. And say, if you seen him in San Diego State, he couldn't shoot a three ball. Now, you watched his confidence in the NBA Finals. I mean, the dude dribbled the ball up and pulled a three, like a pull-up three, and made it. So, obviously, his confidence is up there. It's at a high level, especially in the Finals. So, if he can take what he did in the NBA Finals, work on his ball handling, then I think he's ready to ascend to a different level. But right now, this team is still predicated on the ball movement and Tony Parker running the show. Now, I'm with you. Tony Parker has shown of late to kind of be motoring down. He's getting a lot of injuries and whatnot. So eventually to me, we'll have a better indication when Tony Parker is pretty much done, and we can tell that he's done in terms of the speed and his health is going down. We can then tell if Leonard is ready to take it to the next level.
Totally agree with you. But after the championship game, there was a little bit of debate because of his tweet. He essentially said that Kawhi Leonard is a system player. The things that he prospered in this NBA Finals because of the Spurs system. I don't think there's a lot of debate to that. I think I totally agree with KD. I'm not going to say that Kawhi Leonard is a system player because he obviously does have some individual talent. But if you look at the design of that offense, Popovich even stated himself, they didn't draw up any plays for them. So, for him, now granted, he was aggressive offensively, when he would pull up for threes and kind of take shots outside of kind of the flow of the offense on occasion. But I totally agree with Kevin Durant.
I agree with Kevin Durant. I don't think it's that debatable. I actually, one of my individuals on our Facebook page, my man Jeremy, the commish, said that Kevin Durant was bitter. I do think there is some bitterness, though.
A tad, because this guy's
won a championship before you. But at the same time, I agree with him wholeheartedly. Like, it's, to me, it's not an issue. It's not a debate. Like, if you watch the game, you see that the ball movement, Kawhi Leonard was getting shots because of the ball movement. People were overplaying him. That he saw it. Once they made that rotation and they rushed him at the 3-point line, people overplayed him. He just went by him, drove to the basket. Either he got a dunk or he did a pull up jump shot. It wasn't like he was creating his own shot. Other than a couple pull ups, that was it. Kawhi Leonard, if he was on an isolation, I call this a poorly coached team. Would Kawhi Leonard has to have the same effect? Probably not. I'm not going to say he wouldn't score over 10. I think he would score over 10, but his shooting percentage wouldn't be as effective.
I think if you put him on a Sacramento, asked him to go out and create his own shot and a shot for others, I think at best he's probably a 15.
Best. I agree with that. And it's not a knock on him.
But at this point, he hasn't shown that offensively he has the repertoire and the ball to get a shot for himself and others.
But don't get it twisted. The man outplayed LeBron in both of the games in Miami. Don't get it twisted. I believe that. I'm not going to say that he didn't outplay LeBron to a certain extent. Those first two games in Miami, he outplayed LeBron. So that's something I think he can take into next season, knowing that he outplayed in two games the best player in the world.
Yeah. That's this last question we already pretty much handled when we had the conversation with Ron about Dwayne Wade, his bad series. Is he done? And should LeBron return to Miami? So I think we already had that conversation.
Yeah, but do you think he's done? I don't think we talked about him being done. Do you think he's flat-out done?
No, I don't think he's flat-out done. I think you have to manage his minutes better. I think that, for five to six bursts, Dwayne Wade, and if he improves his efficiency, could be extremely productive. I think Dwayne Wade could be, on some nights, he can give you 25. But for the most part, he's going to be a guy that gives you anywhere between 17 to 21 points a game, if you manage his minutes correctly.
Let me read out some from a lot of our topics about the NBA Finals. My man Aaron, what's up, Aaron? My boy, he said about where did Tim Duncan rank in of all time? Aaron said a top 10, but he said Matt, he had MJ, Magic, Kobe, Wilt, Kareem, Bill, Bird, Shaq, Tim Duncan, Hakeem, and you can argue Oscar. But in no order. He didn't put an order, so nobody, don't try to jump on him for not having an order. But I like it. I'm glad he added Hakeem Olajuwon. Not a lot of people talk about Hakeem. I'm Nigerian, I'm biased, but not a lot of people talk about Olajuwon.
No, he's not a guy. I guess because Hakeem didn't met for like one or two seasons, really dominant.
Oh, man, Hakeem dominated.
No, I mean, statistically. I mean, from a defensive standpoint, yeah.
He scored, always scored about 25.
No, but I mean, like, he didn't have those gaudy stats that people look for.
What are you, what, 25 and 10 rebounds and blocking shots galore? What do you want from the man? Do you want him to score 80?
He wasn't a physical. Oh, man. I mean, he wasn't a dominant.
Oh, ask Dave Robinson and how dominant he was. He dominated. Yeah,
Hakeem probably, I'm not going to say probably, he did have the best footwork of any. Only maybe Duncan can compare to him when it comes to footwork.
His best footwork is better than Duncan.
On the post.
I think his footwork is better than Duncan. I love Duncan.
I mean, Hakeem was far more finesse and swift with his feet, but just fundamentally with his feet, with his footwork.
If you look at all the centers he went through to get to his championships, he embarrassed Shaq. He embarrassed Dave Robinson. He embarrassed he beat on Pat, and that Pat one hurt me. You know, I'm a Georgetown fan. I was like, Pat gonna get his championship. That was my thing. Like, Pat was gonna get his championship, and Hakeem gave him the business. Hakeem went out through three. I just named three, like, iconic centers, man. That man was a dominating figure. But let me read a couple other stuff. We already posed that should LeBron stay in Miami. My man Justin Davis said yes. George, my man George Templeton, also on our, this is on Twitter. I'm sorry, this is on Twitter. George Templeton said, no, he shouldn't. Wade is decaying. Bosch is useless, useless front runner, and they have no center. And Carmelo is fixing all that. So no. So he's saying LeBron shouldn't be going back.
I mean, he's entitled to his opinion. I think he's completely wrong.
Hey, I don't think LeBron should come. Well, I'm gonna tell you, unless, in my opinion, it's. If I'm LeBron, I'm asking questions about the coach. But that's just me. I'm not a big fan of the coach. My man, this is referring to Tim Duncan on Twitter, RJP3 at ESPN. That's that's actually, what's up, RJP? That's the individual from Denver from the ESPN radio show. Cool folks, man. Said top 60. You are geeking. We're going to have to talk later about that one, my man.
Top 60?
Top 60, Tim Duncan. Top 60?
You crazy.
RJP3.
We invite you on the show for next week.
Yeah, you're going to have you back on. We're going to have this discussion. That's my man. We're going to have to talk. But, yeah, so I guess that's about it. I think I've pretty much read them all off.
Yeah, I think that's a wrap for this week. It was a pleasure being back. You know, most likely I should be back next week. So, you know, we'll be back doing it again, talking sports, trying to find things to talk about next week.
I know. I mean,
you have the NBA draft, so I guess we could talk about the NBA draft.
Well, it's next week?
Yeah.
Yes.
Thursday.
That's going. It's
that's
the big
saving grace.
That's a saving grace. We're good.
But after that,
we good. We can make things up,
bleak.
Man. We can make things up. Boxing. I mean, you missed a good boxing discussion last week, too.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, because, you know, my man knocked out. He ended Sergio Martinez. I wanted to say his actual nickname. Maravilla. That's his name?
Marvelous.
Maravilla?
Yeah, Maravilla.
Say again?
Marvelous. Marvilla.
Marvilla. Yeah. That's what it is, right? Yeah, I'm glad. I'm so happy. I told folks he would end his career. So right.
I don't think his career is ended.
It's over.
I think his career
as a prize
elite,
fighter.
No, not as a prize fighter, but as an elite level.
He's gonna be a life shame mostly. He's gonna be a gate opener.
I don't think he's gonna be a gatekeeper.
Gatekeeper.
If he takes the time over the next 6 months to really correct that knee, then he'll be fine. But because, you know, if he takes the time to correct that knee and regain some of that explosiveness and that proper footwork that he exhibited before the surgery, he'll be fine. But as a, you know, elite fighter trying to fight, you know, the best of the best at 160, his chances aren't that great.
Real quick, do you think he's going to win that fight against Cotto?
No, I thought for the simple fact that they stated this in the 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
When you come off an ACL tear and you have the knee brace that supports with the heavy metallic under your knee,
I know
that
about
lets
this.
You know. Yeah, I know about it too. Yeah. Your knee isn't completely stable, and once I saw that, I thought that his chances truly decreased of winning that fight against Cotto, because Cotto, ever since he's gotten back with Freddie Roach, is back to.
And that going to body.
Not only going to the body, but fighting on his toes, not being as flat-footed and using his lateral movement. Okay. So that I knew that was going to create a lot of problems for Martinez.
Like, but, go ahead.
But no, also I wanted to give a shout-out. Yeah, Gary Russell Jr., he fights on Saturday at StubHub in Carson, California for his first attempt at the WBA lightweight championship. Anyone who's familiar, who's from this area, knows that Gary Russell Jr. Is from the area. He grew up in Capitol Heights, Maryland. I actually saw him a couple of times when I was out running in D.C. It's a street. I'm not going to tell people what street I run on. But it's not that far from Pennsylvania Avenue. It's a really steep hit up.
Like you're describing the hell out of it, though.
No, I mean, it's a really steep incline. I saw him. His father was out there, and his two brothers were with him, and they were training. And also one of my friends, he went to his open.
I got to post those. Yeah, I got to post those pictures, too.
Yeah, he went to his open, his media open workout and took some great pictures that we hopefully should be posting to our site.
Yeah, we posted to our Facebook page.
Yeah, to our Facebook page.
We posted our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Great pictures. I did glance at them. I haven't had the opportunity to post them, but I will. I should do it tomorrow, early tomorrow. You know who knows Gary Russell Jr.? The West Coast Little fan. Yeah. They know him and his dad, too.
Yeah.
They've had him on the show a couple times.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal talent. So, as I stated, I think he has the fastest hands in the game.
Me, too. Right now. People argue with me all the time. I think he has the fastest hands in the game. Once he gets started to ascend, I don't think there's going to be anybody. I think he's going to be – people are going to talk to him as – you know, pound for pound, one of the best boxers in the game.
Yeah, but, you know, to me, this is kind of a lose-lose situation for him. Even if he does, if he doesn't come out and look, and I'm about to wrap it up.
If he doesn't
look phenomenal against a guy who this is only his third professional fight, people are going to say he isn't living up to the expectations. But if he loses to a guy who's this only his third professional fight, even though he was a heralded Olympian medalist champion, people are going to say he didn't step up to the level of competition. Even though I do think Gary Russell Jr. is going to win this fight, it's a lose-lose for him in that sense. But hopefully this is the fight that really catapults him to being one of the to the forefront, being one of the ambassadors and names of boxing.
All right, real quick, listen to our show on our official Urban Sports Scene website. Visit www.walio.podbean.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. Once again, it's a pleasure doing this show with you, Will. It's a pleasure doing the show for all to listen to us. So much appreciated.
Yeah, I want to thank Ron for taking the time to call in. And I want to thank everyone else who took the opportunity to either tweet us or post something to our Facebook wall. The love is appreciated. Thanks for your support, and we'll be back and see you guys next week.
All right, man, it's the Urban Sports Scene, and
for ages.
You did.
Deuces.
Supposed to say sign or something. You don't do that stuff no more.
Deuces, bitches.